I don't think it can be separated from industrialization, although very often in the literature it has been separated from it. This is a highly contested area for economic historians. It always has been and remains contentious. And there are really two broad schools of thought on this. The first, articulated by Eric Williams, who was historian writing in the 1940s when he published Capitalism and Slavery, and then more recently a big book by Joseph Inokori, published 15 or 20 years ago in Britain. Both of those argued the same fundamental case, which is that it's not possible to understand industrialization and Britain's transformation without taking account of slavery and the role that slavery played. That's on the one side, and then on the other, a group of historians led primarily by, I think, David Eltis and Stanley Engman, one would say, who argue that slavery was immaterial to British industrialization. Explicitly, Eltis and Engman's conclusion was that industrialization would have taken place at the same pace in the same direction, even had slavery not existed. So those are two obviously irreconcilable points of view. It's binary. In part, it's become binary because of, I think, misunderstanding or perhaps even misrepresentation of what in particular Eric Williams was arguing. Very often, Williams is said to have argued that the profits from the slave trade were the engine of the Industrial Revolution. And that's not the case that he makes in Capitalism and Slavery. He makes a much broader case to say that there are systemic effects of the slave economy on the British domestic economy in terms of increased demand for manufactures. In other words, the slave owners in the colonies are very wealthy, and there's no question that they are indeed very wealthy, and they therefore consume goods and services from Britain. They don't produce anything themselves in Jamaica apart from sugar and a few other tropical crops. They buy everything from Britain. So increase in demand, the lowering of the raw material costs, and again, in the big picture, you can argue that sugar provides low cost calories to a workforce. If you're going to have people in the factories for 14 hours a day, they have to have the ability to get up in the morning, and one way to do that is to give them access to sugar. So the second component of William's argument, his real argument, is low cost of raw materials. The third, which I think is very important, is his argument that new financial institutions develop in Britain as a result of the slave trade and slavery. And I think that component in particular, which has tended to be underplayed in the assessment, is now being looked at in much more seriously by historians like Pat Hudson, who's saying, yes, this is absolutely true. We can see that that's happening, particularly in the northwest of Britain, around Liverpool, which of course becomes then central to cotton broking, cotton trading, and the shipping of manufactured goods from Manchester. And finally, Williams argued that indeed profits from the slave trade and from slavery were reinvested in Britain and the Industrial Revolution. So he does argue that, but it's not his only case. Eltis and Engman focused particularly on this issue of profits from the slave trade and said profits from the slave trade were never big enough to make any difference to Britain. They were tiny in comparison to the GNP, and therefore we can assume that without them, nothing would have been different in Britain. So in a way, the two sides miss each other because they're arguing about slightly different things. And as I say, both Williams and then Joseph Inokori are clear that they're not arguing that slavery caused the Industrial Revolution. Okay? What they're saying is that the Industrial Revolution would not have taken place at the same speed and direction without slavery. So the counterfactual of having no slavery in their case leads to a different outcome. But they are fully aware, both of them, that you have to go back to the commercialization of agriculture in Britain for centuries beforehand, to look at the longer term developments, that the resource endowment of coal in Britain, of course, is also central to the Industrial Revolution. So, as I said, both Williams and Inokori are easily caricatured in this argument about economic growth, economic development. So it's not a matter of taste as to where you stand on the argument. It's in the end, it's a matter of looking at the evidence. And that perhaps takes us to our next question, which is, what are the new methods that are being adopted?